This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. The federal government versus Sean Cone. Joining us now, investigative reporter Lauren Conlon, star of Pup Crime TV. Lauren, thank you for being with us. A lot happening in the courtroom. First of all, direct examination of a special agent, Gerard Gannon. What happened?
We finished the direct examination of special agent Gerard Gannon. He's with the HSI, and he finished showing us all of the evidence that was collected during the Miami raid of Sean Combs' house. And this is his house on Two Star Island. And what they seized from the house, they seized two defaced AR-15s, and these AR-15s, they were separated. We saw the lower barrels and the upper barrels. The upper barrels were actually, they were wrapped in a towel, and the lower barrels were in a separate spot, and the magazines were not with the lower barrels. However, the lower magazines were loaded, both of them.
You know, a lot is being made of the number of agents at the raid. And I find that very, very disturbing. Sydney Sumner also joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. Sydney, I understand there were dozens of federal agents at the raid. So what? What's the issue?
Agents went in feeling like they were going to be confronted by armed guards. That's what they thought they were walking into when they came into this house. They specifically waited for Combs and his family to leave before they entered to avoid any more confrontation. They only found six people at the home, a music producer who has not been named, a property manager, and a few other staff members. But they put all of those people in handcuffs to go into the home, and there were 90 agents total, just about, and they had people sitting out at the water to make sure nobody tried to flee into the canal right behind his home. They had to come into this in full force, and they were right. They found ARs with several modifications, scratched off serial numbers. They knew they were possibly coming into a firefight and prepared for it.
The feds even have the backside that is on the water completely surrounded. You know what, Sydney Sumner, you and I have covered a lot of cases together, and we've gone on location and investigated a lot of cases. You know what? A gun. It makes a big man little and a little man big. You know, let's tell it like it is. Chris McDonough joining me, former homicide detective and star of The Interview Room, now on YouTube. Chris McDonough, you get an AR going? You get an M16 going? How many feds could they shoot down in about 30 seconds? Tell it.
Yeah, a lot. And that's why these operations, you know, you start out with an op plan and you discover those vulnerabilities in relationship to officer safety. You know, where do officers need to be placed? And are they safe in those positions based on the potential threats that you could be facing?
They would be mowed down like an old gangster movie where machine guns are used. And, you know, you got to hand it to the feds, McDonough. They even had the backside covered that bordered on the water, because I could absolutely see some of Didi's cohorts trying to make a getaway by water.
Yeah, absolutely. And Nancy, I actually had a case where five guys were mowed down within 10 seconds from an automatic weapon. It was an SKS.
Sydney Sumner, did I hear you say that the serial numbers were scratched off some of the weapons?
Yes, both of those assault rifles, Nancy, the AR-15s, the serial numbers were scratched through. So it's unclear exactly how they were obtained, if Combs bought them with the serial
number.
Sydney,
I don't care. I don't care if the angel Gabriel came down from heaven and dropped them in Diddy's lap. That is a serious, serious offense. McDonough, jump in. This is critical. You know why serial numbers are scraped off of weapons.
Absolutely, Nancy. And this tells us maybe there's a wider net here, right? What the feds are going to do is throw it into the system called NIBIN, which is the National Ballistic Information Network. And they're going to see if these weapons are tied into any other crimes.
You think a bad guy is going to go to the gun and knife show down at the mall and buy a gun, H-E-L-L-N-O. They get weapons like ARs, basically machine guns on the black market. Why is a serial number scraped off? Because that gun could be connected to another serious crime. I want to see McDonough. McDonough, you need to get real on this. You think they've ever found the gun that killed Tupac Shakur or guns that are related to many, many other ag assaults, shootings, and murders? No, they've never been recovered. And if they were recovered, unless you do a ballistics test, you don't know if it's the murder weapon or the assault weapon. Why? Because criminals scrape off the serial number.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Straight back to Lauren Conlon. In addition to all the weapons, I mean a lot of weapons, what can you tell me about women's shoes with 7-inch platform heels?
It was pretty wild to see a special agent hold up 7-inch heels in court that just happened to be patent leather and red. We saw Balenciaga boots that had 3 different cell phones in them. And then we saw a 4th cell phone in a separate room. We saw a Gucci bag that was filled with a rolled up $100 bill, different types of pills, yellow, orange, pink, different powders. We saw eye drops. And later these drugs were tested and they were confirmed to be coke, ketamine, and MDMA, actually, in an eyedropper. And there were actually 3 orange tablets they found with Tesla symbols on them. And, we also saw Xanax. Drugs were tested for Xanax. There also was a wooden box in the bathroom they found. And on top of that wooden box was a gold inscription that said Puffy. There were mushroom pills in that, and then a bag of crystal rocks that turns out was MDMA.
You know, Sydney Sumner, that reminds me of one of the first times we heard about a male escort. We heard that one male sex worker showed up, knocks at the door. Cassie comes to the door wearing scantily clad lingerie and these heels. I guarantee you it's not Diddy walking around in 8-inch platform heels. He has the women dress up in various outfits, and we see all those heels at his Miami mansion, Sydney.
And we heard a similar story from both of the male escorts that have testified that they believe they were coming for some kind of bachelorette party. And then this woman opens the door. She's by herself except for her purported husband in the corner of the room, and she's disguised. She's wearing some kind of lingerie, a matching wig, some kind of heels, and it just doesn't make sense. The defense's theory that they're saying that this is all just private sex matter for Sean Diddy Combs. There is no reason to own half of a Spencer store and just keep that in your home if that's purely for personal use, where there's not more than one person involved. You're not having copious amounts of freak-off parties. It doesn't crack.
We've heard about a Louis Vuitton bag, a huge Louis, stuffed full of horse trank, ecstasy, cocaine, pink cocaine, Plan B birth control pills, and of course, high-powered Viagra. Diddy needs his Viagra. Okay, I'm going to have to go to our shrink in a moment about mushroom pills, crystal rocks that are MDMA, and what effect that has. You know what? I'll ask him right now. Joining me, Scott Johnson, forensic psychologist, 33 years, addressing sex predators. ForensicConsultation.org is where you can find him, author of Physical Abusers and Sex Offenders, When I Love You Turns Violent. That's another book. Scott Johnson, thank you for being with us. What is MDMA and what effect does it have on a person?
All right. So you have the ecstasy basically by the street name, and you have people that become delusional. It's difficult to say no. At higher levels, it may cause a euphoric statement where people are kind of out of touch with reality, sort of delusional. But it's very difficult to say no or to resist when you're under the influence of these medications.
Ecstasy, Molly, is a stimulant with psychedelic properties. That's what it is. And if you drop it in one of these ladies' drinks, there's no telling what effect it's going to have on her. Lauren Conlon, very quickly, Lauren, I want to ask you about what happened when we got to Diddy's bathroom of his mansion that was raided, the bathroom.
Yeah, and then we got to a bathroom where we saw two containers. And in one container, there was 25 bottles of baby oil and 31 bottles of Astroglide. And I actually spotted two rubber duckies, a little bit confusing. And when they asked a special agent, was there more baby oil that you found? He said yes, and there was, because we saw a mini crate of baby oil during his direct testimony the day before. Now, right around when he was testifying, Diddy's sons, Justin and Christian, walked in, and Diddy turned around. He didn't smile, but he nodded his head at them.
Is he guilty of all the counts or any of the counts in this federal indictment? So far, according to my legal analysis, the charges of sex trafficking have been shown by not only Cassie Ventura, but another female witness as well. Transportation of male sex workers across state lines to engage in prostitution, yes. Now, racketeering is going to have to be explained to the jury. Racketeering, just think about Tony Soprano. It is a loose confederation of people that engage all together to achieve a criminal act. In this criminal conspiracy, the act would be sex trafficking, bringing people in from various states to perform prostitution and to force women to engage in freak-offs against their wills. Bam! Easy! My question is, what woman in her right mind would consent to have sex with not just a male escort, a lot of people do that, but a convicted killer / male escort? Listen.
At least two of the male escorts Cassie identified were on the Showtime reality series Gigolos. One is also a convicted murderer. Akshaya Kubiak, who uses the name Ash Armand, beat Herlene Dulai to death. Kubiak claimed he blacked out after taking mushrooms with Dulai, one of Kubiak's clients, and when he woke up the next morning, she was brutally beaten to death.
It's going to sound just insane, because it is insane. We took mushrooms together last night. There was a struggle. She's not conscious or breathing.
You're on the ground.
We have the male detained right now.
Officers and medical personnel arrived on scene, and that female was pronounced deceased.
This was one of the worst beatings of a person, of a human, that I've seen.
This whole situation is what horror movies are made of.
On the morning of the murder, they didn't call 911 first. They actually called another gigolo.
That from Paramount's Sin City Gigolo. They find the dead body, and they don't call 911. They actually call another gigolo. Okay, you know, to Rachel Fisher joining us, a special guest joining us. Rachel is an anti-trafficking expert featured in the 22 documentary Surviving Sex Trafficking. She is a forensic nurse, a sex assault nurse examiner, an expert witness, and she is at legalrnconsult.org. Rachel, thank you for being with us. It's one thing to talk about Diddy dressed up in a Muslim female burqa from the neck up. It's another thing to talk about this male escort's moniker is the Punisher. But it's another thing to force a woman, that would be Cassie Ventura, into sex with not just a gigolo, but a convicted killer gigolo.
That's the danger of forcing somebody to be involved in a commercial sex act, whether you're the recipient or you're the one performing it and getting paid for it. That's still a commercial sex act that she was being coerced and forced into. And you never know who's on the other end of the call. When you click that ad online to order an escort, because you can get one faster than you can get a pizza in most places, and whoever shows up, you don't know their background. It's a very dangerous career to be in the sex industry. And many of the people that are there are not there willingly, and some are. But you never know what their story is on the other side and what they're going to come with. That's why we have so many that are murdered when they're in the sex industry, or you get an in-call where an escort comes to you and you get murdered or robbed. And it's a very dangerous thing that you're forcing somebody to be a part of. There are multiple people involved. And so all of those people become part of that scheme.
I wonder what Itty Bitty Diddy is feeling and thinking right now in a courtroom. As a Homeland Security special agent describes everything that was found in his mansion that was raided. Crates of baby oil, Astroglide, that's not against the law. What I care about are the federal counts in that federal indictment.
Former assistant David James testifies that Combs was occasionally violent with private chef Jordan Atkinson. According to James, after an altercation at his Alpine, New Jersey home, Combs instructed him to file a police report stating Atkinson was the aggressor and hit him first. James, who witnessed the altercation, says he simply drove around Alpine for roughly an hour before returning and telling Combs it was filed. James says he didn't want to comply with Combs' request because he did not want to file a false report.
Sydney Sumner joining me, investigative reporter, Crime Stories. Sydney, explain to me, am I getting this correct? The former assistant, David James, described an incident where Sean Combs allegedly attacked a female chef, but then wanted James to go file a police report stating it was the other way around, but James didn't do it?
That's absolutely correct. James said that Combs and this chef got into an altercation, and Combs, immediately after it ended, came to James and asked him, look, let's go to the cops, let's file a police report, but make sure it says that she attacked, she hit me first, she was the aggressor. And James kind of did his, okay, yeah, I'll do that. And he got into a car and just drove around for about an hour before returning home and saying, yep, filed it. It's in there. They'll contact me if they need anything else from us. And the whole time, he never spoke to a police officer about it because he didn't want to be filing.
You know what is probative about this, Sydney? This. Right here. Here we have Rob Shooter, Sean Combs, beating the stew out of Cassie Ventura. She's holding up her little left hand to fight him off. And they're going to argue, according to Garagos, and of course this could change, just like the defense in Scott Peterson changed from a satanic cult took Lacey to burglars took Lacey. I mean, it changed over time. So at one point, Garagos let it slip that the argument to defeat this video is that Cassie, 90-pound Cassie, is the aggressor here. She's the one giving him the booty beating over text from another woman, okay? She's the aggressor. Same thing with the chef. See what I'm saying? The connection? So apparently that's his MO, modus operandi, method of operation. He attacks the woman, according to evidence, and then says she's the aggressor. Did he ever take responsibility for anything, Rob Shooter?
He took responsibility when everything went well. When things were going good, it was because of him. When things were not going well, it was because of everybody else. But this video here, Nancy, this is the case to me. This video changes everything. And there's some irony that a man who has spent his whole life putting out images, videos, to make him into the star he is ultimately, I believe, going to be brought down because of this video. That is something that is going to be in the jury's mind. And the excuses are just excuses.
You just stated that Combs spent an entire lifetime curating an image through video and photos. Like what? What image?
Let me give you examples of this. There were images to make him look powerful, images to make him look important, images to make him look literally like a king. I got Diddy was People magazine's Sexiest Men Alive issue. He wanted the cover. He did not get that, but he was in the issue. And he shot it as if he was a king. He asked at the photo shoot if he could have a crown on his head, if he could have a coat, a fur coat. And he knew the power of images. I remember distinctly, he once said to me, Rob, the story doesn't matter. The headline and the photograph is all anybody remembers. He knew the power of media. He knew the power of video, and he exploited it. And now it's going to bite him in the bum.
Straight out to Sydney Sumner, Crime Stories investigative reporter who has been on the case from the beginning and has been analyzing Cassie Ventura's testimony. Sydney, the high points of Cassie Ventura's testimony. Explain.
Nancy, I think the high point of Cassie's testimony is that Diddy was in control of many aspects of her life. So she meets Combs at just 19 years old. Their relationship begins when she's just about 21. And she talks about not even wanting to kiss Sean Combs. So the first time that they shared a kiss, they weren't a couple at this point. The first time he showed romantic interest in her was at her 21st birthday party in Las Vegas. And Cassie admits that the kiss left her feeling extremely confused. She ran from her party in tears, not sure what to do with that as a new artist in the industry. So their relationship starting on that point and going from there, Combs just continued to take more and more control of her life. And he was always there. Like, she didn't pick up the phone. He would call her over and over until she did, or he would send security guards to come find her. So on top of the freak-offs, which seems to be just a segment of their relationship, he coerced her into anything and everything. She didn't feel like she had an ability to say no to Combs, especially with the violence and the threats of releasing these videos. Ventura talks about keeping broken iPhones and broken laptops and things of that nature because she was so worried about what was on them if anyone was to get their hands on them.
Speaking of a laptop incident, earlier on we heard from witness Philip. Listen.
Philip describes one evening where Ventura was at the computer during a break in sex. Combs yelled for his girlfriend to come to him, and when she did not, Combs threw a bottle of liquor at Cassie that shattered against the wall after missing her head by inches. Philip says Combs then dragged Ventura to another room, and he overheard what sounded like a smack. Then Combs sang, "When I tell you to come here, you come here now, not later." Moments later, the couple reemerged, and Combs demanded they resume.
Joining us is Rob Shooter, publicist for Sean Combs. Rob, thank you for being with us. Also star of Naughty But Nice podcast and author of The Four-Word Answer. You have a particular insight into another relationship, if it could be called that, of Combs, which preceded Cassie Ventura and is basically a blueprint. Second verse, same as the first, and that would be Kim Porter, the mother of his children, now dead. Rob Shooter, describe Combs' relationship with Miss Porter.
Puff's relationship with Kim was very much the same relationship he had with Cassie. In fact, some people called Cassie Kim 2.0. They had seen this method. They had seen this relationship. They had seen this grooming. And so Kim was shy, did what she was told, was very much on his arm. He didn't like her to talk very much. He picked the clothes that he would wear. He would decide the events that she would go to. Cassie seems to be doing that too, or have done that too. The difference, though, is that Kim didn't want to be a recording artist. Cassie really did. She wanted to make it big in show business. She wanted to record songs. And so my heart breaks for her because she was not only in debt to Diddy in her personal life, but also her professional life, which must have made it impossible, almost impossible, for her to get away from.
Special guest joining me, Brett Brown, Executive Director, SASS Surviving Assault, Standing Strong. You know, it's the same old thing. It's not a new story. And to try to explain why women stay, I mean, when a woman's faced with losing her home, losing her career, maybe losing her children, being blackballed in the industry, what would you do? What would you not do to ensure those things don't happen. What about it, Brett?
Well, I think it's everything that you just said. The part that we're kind of missing is the beginning and the end. You know, these women, they want to be seen and they want to be respected and they want to achieve. And those desires get used against them in this power imbalance. And so whether we're talking about Harvey Weinstein or we're talking about Sean Combs, the recipe is still the same. And once they're on the hook with these powerful men, then become you enters the threats and the violence and the force. And so fear and financial insecurity and so many other things start to play in. And so it's not a matter of I keep going so I can get something. These women have to stay in this situation in order to stay alive. And it's interesting to me because Sean Combs, like any abuser, has spent an enormous amount of time on his reputation and on his look to make sure that he seems like the fun guy next door. And here is this predator sitting in a courtroom with a Bible. And I just wanted to say that even Satan quoted scripture in the Bible, and at the end of the day, he was still the devil.
Lauren Conlon, investigative reporter and star of Pop Crime TV. Lauren, thank you for being with us. What happened in court?
We saw Kid Cudi testify, and it was fairly quick. It took a portion of the morning, and during opening statements, the prosecutors gave us a little bit of a taste about this break-in that involved Diddy, an assistant, and one of his associates. Well, when Kid Cudi, a.k.a. Scott Mescudi, took the stand, it turns out that Diddy was the one that broke into his house, kidnapped one of his employees, Capricorn Clark, with an associate, went over there looking for Cassie. And this was after Sean Combs found out about this relationship that was going on between Kid Cudi and Cassie. And look, Kid Cudi said he was a little confused. Cassie had told him that she and Sean Combs were broken up. You know, they were on again, off again. So when he got this call from Cassie, where she was very, very upset and alarmed, this was in 2011, he went to pick her up. He took her to a hotel. And it turns out she gave Sean Combs Kid Cudi's address. This came out. That was a little confusing. So Kid Cudi finds out that Sean Combs is at his house because Capricorn Clark, the assistant, calls him and Cassie from the driveway in the car, very scared, and says, look, Combs is in the house. Now, Kid Cudi gets very upset. He says he's going over there. So he drives over there and he says that he calls Sean Combs and he says, hey, mother effer, why are you in my house? And Diddy says something like, I just want to talk. Now, when he gets to the house, Diddy's no longer there. He notices that, you know, nothing is broken, nothing is out of place, but he did have some Christmas presents for his family in Chanel boxes. Those were unwrapped on the kitchen table, and his dog was locked in a bathroom. He also noted that the surveillance cameras outside his house appeared to be pointed down. Now, after this, you know, he leaves. He sees that he's getting text messages from Combs, and he thinks to himself, okay, I don't really know if I want to get involved here because who knows if he has weapons, whatever. So he actually calls the police and files a police report. Now, we've discussed this. It's December of 2011. Kid Cudi and Cassie go to Cassie's family home in Connecticut for the holidays. Sean Combs still is texting Kid Cudi, you know, trying to talk to him, trying to you know, get a meeting with him. And Cudi ignores him. And then Cassie ends up breaking up with him on his trip. He returns back to LA. And a month later, it's January 2012. He is about 45 minutes away from his house, Kid Cudi. And his dog babysitter calls him and says, your car is on fire in the driveway. A Molotov cocktail has somehow been thrown in the car. We then see pictures of the car. The roof is broken in or sunken in with a hole in it. The inside is all charred. He calls the police, files a police report. And then a few days later, he says, okay, you know, that's it. I'm contacting Combs and we're going to work this out. So they have a meeting at the LA Soho House. He describes D-Rock, the security guard that we've heard about multiple times, ushering him into this room. And this got a lot of laughs, Nancy. He described Combs as facing this big window in the room with his back towards him, his hands behind his back. And he actually said he looked like a Marvel supervillain. So he said also that Diddy's demeanor was so calm that it was almost bizarre. He offered him water twice. you know, and they seem to work it out. And then at the end of the conversation, and Cassie joined later, by the way, and at the end of the conversation, Cuddy says they shook hands. And while their hands were clasped, he said, well, what about my car? And Diddy basically was like, I don't know anything about your car. And they let their hands go. And then, you know, they kind of walked out. And that was that. And he said he hadn't seen him until a few years later. He saw him again at the Soho House. And this time, Diddy was with his two daughters. And he apologized to Kid Cudi and said, look, I'm sorry for everything that happened, anything that went on between us. But Nancy, when Brian Steele got up to do the cross-examination, he pointed out a couple things, as that's his job, but he pointed out that during the break-in, Kid Cudi's door, there was no damage to it. The door was wide open and anybody could have walked in. He also pointed out that there were DNA or fingerprints pulled from the investigation into the car blow up, and those that DNA was actually, it belonged to a female.
Okay, let me understand something. So 1 month later, after the whole Cassie Ventura relationship blows up, 1 month later, Kid Cudi's car is bombed with a Molotov. So isn't it true that Sean Combs had discussed blowing up his car?
Yes, Cassie. This is through Cassie. She said that this was discussed and he was going to do it when one of Kid Cudi's friends were present.
So Sean Combs' fingerprints and DNA were not on the car that was blown up with the Molotov 1 month after Diddy threatened to blow it up. Okay, sorry, not impressed. I mean, do you really think Sean Combs, Diddy, was going to run down to the Citgo or the Valero and pump his own gas into a container and make his own Molotov? I mean, he didn't even clean up his own disgusting hotel rooms that were covered with a baby oil slick. He made somebody else do it. So, of course, his DNA isn't there. Why is it important? Because that is what a criminal enterprise is. Now, we see former assistant George Kaplan on the stand. Now, talk about an unindicted co-conspirator. That would be him. Listen.
Assistant George Kaplan says he was sent to pick up drugs for his famous boss. Kaplan says Sean Combs gave him cash and a phone number to call.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Assistant George Kaplan says he was sent to pick up drugs for his famous boss. Kaplan says Sean Combs gave him cash and a phone number to call.
So, Sean Combs could talk a grown man into going and buying his drugs for him? No wonder this went down in the courtroom. Listen.
Diddy's former assistant, George Kaplan, takes the stand. Kaplan tells the judge he is only here because of a subpoena and he plans to invoke his Fifth Amendment right. Judge Subramanian grants Kaplan immunity, but the deal does not cover perjury.
Let's see a little snippet of all the drugs seized at Sean Combs' mansion. Now, we know that Frank Black was a name, a pseudonym, used to check Sean Combs in and out of hotel rooms. Also used to get fake prescriptions, which is illegal. You think that Sean Combs rolled up in his SUV to the CVS or the Duane Reade or the Walgreens and got his own stuff? No. There had to be a minion. Troy Slayton. Sean Combs convinced Kaplan to perform crimes for him, buying drugs, get illegal drugs such as MDMA. Also convinced him to get prescription drugs under a fake name. Where's Slayton? Also a crime. So now he is talking his minion into buying his Astroglide lubricant, his baby oil, his candles, his liquor, all of that, and importantly, critically, using the company credit card, Troy Slayton.
Well, buying Astroglide, although it may sound gross in this situation, is not illegal. Buying drugs, Yes, illegal, but that doesn't make a RICO case. The government still has to prove that the purchasing of the drugs was to advance the criminal enterprise, was to advance his business interest, his legitimate business interest. He had legal.
You think Diddy took all those drugs himself? No, that was being dropped in the woman's drinks. I mean, you need to go back to law school, man, and take a refresher course on RICO. RICO is anything, any act that advances a crime, and the crimes have to be laid out in the indictment, which they are. I've already read them to you. I'll read them again. Sex trafficking, forced labor, kidnapping, arson, bribery, obstruction.
Those are all terrible things, but that doesn't make RICO. You have to prove that all of those things.
What do you think Diddy was using all those drugs for? He'd be dead if he took them all. He was feeding them to these women in their drinks. What do you think the Astroglide, the baby oils for? For a freak-off, according to these women, against their will, and bringing in male sex workers from another state. That is against the law. RICO.
That's sex trafficking. So we're mixing up two different things there, Nancy. You know that those are separate
crimes
here. Also
in the indictment.
Yes.
You're the one that said Astroglide had nothing to do with it. It has everything to do with it, just like the baby oil.
Just because somebody is having, a rock star is having a drug-fueled party, doesn't mean that they're guilty of RICO.
To Dr. Bethany Marshall, that video of literally a Dixie dumpster going down the hallway of the hotel. Dr. Bethany, how do you convince grown men and women to do your illegal bidding and clean up your bodily fluids, your sperm,
Nancy,
your baby oil, your Astroglide, and they do it.
All of it. Nancy, probably what he did is he started out being super charming with them, pretending to be their friend, buying them gifts, pretending to advance their interests in some way. And once he gained their trust, he would send them out on some criminal act. Once they committed the criminal act, now they were stuck and could not get away.
Isn't it true, Sydney Sumner, that sworn testimony is that Sean Combs tried to bribe a security guy?
That's correct, Nancy. He tried to hand the security guard a stack of money as big as his hand to leave them alone and to just drop the whole situation and not get Cassie Ventura out of that Intercontinental hotel room.
So Tom Smith, former NYPD star of Gold Shields podcast, Tom Smith, I guess it's just a Diddy world and we all living in it because all these people are so afraid or have their careers at stake, they go along with it. It will be a cold day in H-E-double-L that I would go clean up somebody else's bodily fluids unless my children threw up. It's not going to happen. But all these people just went along to get along.
Yep, and it's influence, and it's his power that controlled them. What can he do for them in the future? How can he propel their jobs, their careers, anything like that. That all is involved in this power trip that he was on. And like you know, Nancy, once you get away with it a little bit, you keep pushing the envelope to the next level, to the next level.
Right now, Sean Combs in a federal courthouse being charged and being tried for a multi-count federal indictment. And what RICO means, which is the major prize for the state, is that Sean Combs headed up a criminal enterprise involving many, many crimes, including arson, blowing up Kid Cudi's car. You hear that, Troy Slayton? It's the death knell. It's the death knell. Kid Cudi's testimony and the testimony of all these other assistants, the nail in the coffin, the death knell for Diddy.
It might be, Nancy, but the government is still going to have to weave together all these disparate dots and tie it together to show that this was an overarching grand conspiracy to further a criminal enterprise. And I think we're going to hear a lot from Diddy's attorneys when it comes time for his defense to put on their presentation.
Well, you're right, Slayton. I don't know what they've got up their sleeves, but you're absolutely right. The state better be ready. Thank you to our guests, but especially to you for being with us. Nancy Grace signing off. Good night, friend.